On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we give you one bold prediction for all 30 MLB teams. And don't worry, we are not cowards. We are getting indeed as bold as it gets. Plus, we give you our fantasy baseball preview, some players that we are very excited about, and some details about the Baseball Barbacast Fantasy League that you can join before opening day. And of course, it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world brave enough to deliver actually bold predictions. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and on this show, we will not do any of that diet BS. We are bold and we are proud.
We will be bringing the heat. The WBC is behind us, which means it is time to preview the season. We will do that in a few different ways leading up to opening night next Wednesday, but this episode will most prominently feature our latest edition of our bold predictions. One for every team. This time I gave Jake the AL and I took the NL, switching off after how we did it last year. But before we get to our bold predictions, would like to remind everyone that fantasy baseball season is here. Make sure you go draft with your friends on Yahoo Fantasy. Sign up Yahoo Fantasy app or at yahoofantasy.com/baseball. And stick around. We're going to be doing a little bit more fantasy chat later on, including details of the return of the Baseball Barbacast Fantasy League, which you can be a part of. More details on that later on in this show. But Jake, it's time to get bold. Let's not delay any longer. It's our opener.
With no due respect to other baseball prognosticators offering bold predictions, their predictions are not bold enough. They stink. People will say, here are my bold predictions. I think the Pirates will make the playoffs. Here are my bold predictions. I think that, you know, Junior Caminero will be an MVP contender. No, that's not bold. You do not have courage. You are a coward. We are not cowards. And so on our annual Bold Predictions show, we put our necks on the line. And here is how bold we are. Last year, in giving a bold prediction for all 30 teams, Jordan, I believe we went 0-30. I do not think a single prediction of ours was correct. And yeah, go ahead.
I got close on one or two. I think my one that Austin Hedges would not be one of the five worst hitters in baseball was technically maybe correct. But for the most part, yeah, we did not get remotely close. Now, I will say, and I think
that's the point.
That's the point. Right. We're not trying to be right. We're trying to be bold.
No, we're trying to be bold. These are not correct predictions. These are bold predictions. And the way that we grade them on the show is that one of us offers our prediction and the other one deems such prediction as either cold, bold, or courageous.
Yeah, I think we've used the term heroic in the past, but I think courageous
heroic.
Is...
We can do heroic. I kind of
like courageous also. Either way, it's that whatever. We're going the opposite of cowardly, I think, is what we're really trying to get at. If you want to listen to our predictions from last year, we did them on March 26th, and we reviewed them on the December 2nd episode. So if you want to kind of get a sense for the flavor of these predictions, that is a good place to look. We also did these back in 2022 on our YouTube channel. Those ones were really kind of over the top.
Unhinged.
But some fun ones in there. And I have this year, I've got a tribute to one of those. So we will see. But okay, so again, the way we organize this, it's just one for every team. And We're just gonna go right into it. Jake's gonna go first. Jake's gonna do all the American League bold predictions, and then I will come back in the B block and give you the NL. So Jake Mintz, without further ado, let's get into it. I'm ready to tell you whether you're cold, bold, or heroic, or courageous.
I already know that I am courageous. I don't need you to tell me this, but I guess the feedback is helpful. Famously, my ego is not big enough. I will begin with the New York Yankees. And I will say that in this 2026 season, Giancarlo Stanton will steal a base.
Ooh, okay. I think this is bold. This is perfectly bold. I'm not going to go that this is courageous because I think, well, first of all, can you give us some context? When is the last time he stole a base?
2020.
Ooh, okay. All right. So that's a long time ago. That said, I do think that we've slowly been moving with the new rules that it's not that hard to steal. And I could, you know, I don't need him to pinch run and steal a base in the highest leverage moment of the season. I just need him to get there and it not be defensive indifference. It's still unlikely because you just said it has been many years and he cannot really move. However, one base is a bold, but not nuts. So perfect. Love it. Love it. Beautiful. Keep going.
Giancarlo, get on your horse. The Toronto Blue Jays finish the 2026 season under 500.
Ooh. Okay. That is also bold. That's bold. That's not wild. There are some concerns on the mound, which we will get to later in the good, the bad, the ugly, but don't need to overcomplicate this one. Is it disrespectful? This is honestly probably more disrespectful than it is bold. But in that regard, I think you kind of just hit it right there. It is bold.
Pete Alonso of the Baltimore Orioles weeps uncontrollably on his return to Citi Field. I'm not talking tears up. I'm talking like he's on the Orioles. Waterworks. Full waterworks.
When does this happen? So one of the famous returns involving the tier, we had when Freddie Freeman went back to Atlanta, the press conference was very emotional. At what point is he weeping? I think that, like, is he weeping as he's stepping
during
into
the tribute
box?
Video?
Like,
during the tribute video before the game,
while he's
on
playing.
Monday, September 14th, the Orioles go play the Mets all the way at the end of the season. I will say that Alonso, like, he will need to use some sort of cloth to dry his eyes.
Okay. I mean, that's a little bit less than weeping uncontrollably, which is like, he like can't play. I think the other part about this that I'm really interested in,
that's the courageous take, is Alonso cries so much he has to remove himself from the lineup.
Especially Pete tears. Who doesn't miss games, right? Like, he's not injured. He's just so emotional. The part about this that I'm really interested in is the fact that it's in September. Does that make it more or less likely because he's farther removed? Like, if he was going there in 3 weeks, I don't know how that would impact whether it was more fresh, more or less likely. Like, and how are the Orioles doing? How are the Mets doing? How is that all going to it? So I think I'll still go with I actually am going to go career. I'm going to go beyond bold. I think Pete's going to be able to hold it together. As you describe it, maybe we see a small little wipe, be like, oh, I'm a little, I don't think weeping uncontrollably. I think that's way too far.
Okay.
So
yeah. Weeping uncontrollably is just a hilarious thing to think about for a baseball player. All right. The Tampa Bay Rays, Junior Caminero breaks the all-time single season record for double plays grounded in two. Now, the all-time single season record for this right now is held by Hall of Famer Jim Rice, who bounced into 36 double plays in 1984. That is the integration record. Junior Caminero last season, in his first full year as a big leaguer, hit into 31. Okay. He is off to a roaring start. Why is he a perfect candidate for this? He hits the snot out of the ball and hits it on the ground to the pole side quite a bit. And that means the harder you hit it, the easier it is to ground into a double play. I think Cam Manero finishes with over 36 double plays grounded into this season.
And what you just laid out is why this is relatively cold. If I'm going to give you a cold for any of these, I think this one has to be it. Okay. He was on pace to just do this last year. And then he slowed down at the end. So if the record was 45, like, yeah, I'd give you bold. But this is just something I expect him to do at some point in his career. Now, the argument against it is that he's so ridiculously talented that he's just going to figure out how to stop doing that and just start elevating the ball more often. Yes. And then from there, he just won't ground into this many double plays anymore. But I think, again, within the context of what I imagine you still have cooking up here in this segment, I think if I'm going to give any of these cold, it's going to be this one.
Yeah, that is fair. Within the context of the absolute fuego coming down the pipe, this can
keep
be determined as cold. However, saying that anybody will break any MLB record in a season, it's tough to say is cold. That's my retort.
I get it. Again, I'm just adjusting. I'm adjusting for this Jake plus, right? It's park adjusted
Jake plus
for what I imagine is coming. Yeah. So go ahead. Keep it going.
Garrett Crochet of the Boston Red Sox throws 230 innings.
Oh, okay. This is a great one. I thought about this for some National League pitchers, just thinking about like a workload prediction, because I believe you picked that number because we have not seen it in like 15 years?
10 years. The last pitcher to throw 230 innings in a season was a left-handed pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. David Price got to 230 in 2016. We have not seen 250 since, I believe, 2011. Justin Verlander did it. Sandy Alcantara got up to 228 when he won the Cy Young in 2022. Mm-hmm. But 230 is really absurd. Crochet, though, only making 32 starts this year, got up over, I think, 205-ish. And if you give him a couple more starts, I think he's got a decent chance at it.
You know, this is probably closer to courageous than it is cold, which is just saying something about the state of starting pitching in 2026. But I'll say appropriately bold, because I do think that this is possible. But... And it's like, this is really kind of what Garrett Crochet has. You know, he's not the only pitcher that goes out there and says, I'm just trying to throw as many innings as possible. But he's really been on this mission to do it after kind of showing everyone, like, what he did last year was was already amazing. You know, I don't know what you would have set the over-under at for his innings last year in his first year with the Red Sox. But that was the whole point. It was like, great, let me get this extension and now just let me go. And he led the American League in innings last year, and he's going to be up there again if he can stay healthy. So I like this one. I like this is going to be a fun one to track. Regular bold.
Minnesota Twins. Byron Buxton, 160 games played.
courageous. I mean, this is beyond. Like, the great thing about Buxton, God bless him, last year, it was like, oh my God, Buxton, he was healthy the whole year. I felt like I got to watch Buxton every day, and he was so awesome. And then you pull it up, and, 126 games. So
he has not 160. Played. It was his most games. Yeah. 126 was his most games in a season since 2017. Okay. However, I think him playing in the WBC is a sign that he feels as good as he has felt in some time. And I think that he's going to ride that wave to 160. I really should have said 150 now that I'm thinking about it. I kind of bit off a little bit more than I could chew here, because 150 would have been bold anyway. And like, no one really plays 160 games. Like, he's going to get three off days at some point.
on the Twins. Yeah. So I might have given you courageous for 150 and you just went just blasted all the way to 160. So I'm not going to go any farther on this one. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Yep. So but hey, I'd love to see it. That would be a wonderful outcome for certainly Buxton and certainly the Minnesota Twins.
Chicago White Sox. Pope at a game. Pope
already
comes to game.
Pope wow. at okay. game.
Pope shows up at game. This is the Pope's first full season as the Pope. White Sox fan and Pope.
As White Sox fan Pope, right. Also his full season as Pope.
As Pope. First full season as Pope. And I think now that he's settled into his papal duds and responsibilities, he will feel more empowered to do Pope stuff. The Pope World Cup maybe seems like a thing Pope would do. Pope go to World Cup for kick around footy ball. And maybe when he does Pope responsibilities during the World Cup, he swings on over to the rate to watch Shane Smith go five strong. Pope at a game.
I am going to go still courageous here.
So is the Pope.
I really don't have a great sense for, I imagine he's a pretty busy guy. Like, I don't know what's on the agenda this year for his full season. I don't know.
You think the Pope's a busy guy?
Where else he needs to travel. I don't know.
No way.
I don't know what is standard, how often the Pope is in America. I assume that's going to increase now that he is an American.
Has to.
And the World Cup point is an interesting one that I am compelled by to a degree. However, I'm not there yet. I think this is really trying to, I don't know. I almost feel like
Does Pope ever go to White Sox game?
Yes. Here's the last thing I'll say about this. I think if you're the Pope, and it's clear, he's probably by now, he's like, everyone is just foisting as many, you know, American sporting jerseys on him. Like, to play, hey, look, we got this American guy from Chicago. Like, I wonder if he's almost going to try and be like, you know what? This is my first full season. I want to make sure I'm focused on the right things and
managing his workload.
Not just managing his workload, just making sure he's kind of proving himself, not just to the stupid American sports fans. That should be pretty low down on who he needs to prove himself to. And so I think he kind of needs to establish himself further before he starts just like showing up.
Establish the heater.
To see if Miguel Vargas like really is an above average hitter. Okay. I have to imagine that's a little bit farther down his priorities, but I think it will happen. Like, we will see it in our lifetime. I don't think it's this season. So courageous.
If you work for the Pope and you're listening to this, email us baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. We'd love to get the Pope on to talk Sox ball. Guardians. If you thought that was in fuego, buckle up, buttercup. Luis Ortiz appears in a game. Luis Ortiz, the Robin to Emmanuel Clase's gambling Batman, is exonerated and reinstated quickly enough to pitch in a Major League Baseball game this season for the Cleveland Guardians. What proof do I have? No, none. Zero.
That is absolutely courageous on all fronts. Courageous is probably not the word we want to use in talking about this situation, but in terms of your confidence in this happening, I am very interested in the difference between Luis Ortiz and Emmanuel Clase's eventual punishments. The other reason I'm pushing back on this one is because it sounds like this whole trial and stuff keeps getting pushed back. So I just don't think we're anywhere close to even having an answer there. If you were just saying,
it would have been a better one
in the big leagues, but I
should have done Luis Ortiz or Clase appears in a Mexican League game this year. Like, that feels more
like while they're waiting
possible. Yeah, like absolutely. Yeah. You know, Diablos Rojos picks up the phone and is like, "Hey,
they'd probably take him down there for an outing." But yeah, I mean, that's no chance.
The Kansas City Royals, the winners of the WBC, kind of. They win 100 games. They win 100 baseball games this season.
Okay. That's yeah, I'll go bold again. Approaching courageous.
100 games.
100 is a lot of games. That's a lot of games. That's a lot of games.
You know how many teams won 100 last year?
Zero.
Right? Zero in the year before?
Yeah.
One. Zero in 2024.
Zero.
In 2023, one, two teams did. The Braves and the Orioles. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers. It's not that easy to win 100 games anymore.
Also, how many games did the Royals win in 2023? I believe they lost 100 games in 2023. So, here's what this is. Here's a little timely March Madness reference. Siena, the 16 seed, played against Duke yesterday.
Yeah.
And were winning for like 90% of the game. And did you see the key detail from that game?
No.
They made zero substitutions. And I bring that up about the Kansas City Royals because this is, I believe they made zero substitutions and their starters played the entire game. Certainly in the first half. And I bring that up with the Kansas City Royals because that is essentially what is going to have to happen for them to win 100 games. We're going to need all their starters. No pitching injuries. No.
Okay.
Sorry, Omaha Storm Chasers. Your services will not be necessary because your services are probably not good enough. So if we can get 162 from the starting nine, yeah, maybe. I think you got a chance. I won't say courageous, though. I do like the Royals this year. I think it's regular bold, but it's pretty bold.
The Royals in their franchise history have won 100 games just once in 1977. So this would be quite an impressive showing.
Okay. That would be wild. Yeah.
Detroit Tigers. Framber Valdez has a lower ERA than Tarek Skubal.
Ooh, okay. I've got one along these lines.
Last year, Tarek Skubal had a 2-2-1 and Framber Valdez had a 3-6-6. And so quite a bit of regression and improvement would be necessary to make this happen.
Yeah, but, you know, we've seen Framber have an ERA under 3 before, twice in the last 4 seasons. So I think it's bold. I think mine that I have later in this vein is more bold than this, but we will get to that when we get to that. I'll grant you bold because Google is that good, but I think that Framber is going to do a little bit better this year. So I'm in on Framber.
Okay. Texas Rangers. Most American team ever.
Ooh, okay. Tell me, I don't even know how I'm supposed to respond to this. How am I grading this? What is this?
That's not
what are we measuring?
You want me to tell you how to respond to things? That feels like your decision. The Texas Rangers currently, their starting lineup is 9 American guys, right? They have just one non-American on the 26-man roster as far as position players are concerned, that is Ezekiel Duran. The pitching front, they have just one non-American on the 26-man roster, that is Robert Garcia. Okay? Eovaldi, DeGrom, Gore, Leiter, Jacob Latz is the rotation.
Yeah.
Chris, Cole, Josh, Jacob, Jalen, Carter, Tyler. That's the bullpen. The offense is Brandon, Wyatt, Corey, Jake, Jock, Evan, Josh, Danny, Kyle, Sam, Andrew, and Ezekiel. This is a lot of gringos on one baseball team. How do I want to define the most American team ever? let me get back to you on that. I ran with a bunch of different things, like percentage of plate appearances by American-born players, percentage of innings by American-born players. I think when the dust settles and the season ends, I feel... Now, obviously, I have to do this, like, since... can I say wild card era? Because obviously, yeah, like, in 1922, right? This is just... whatever. So I'm going to say the most American team in the wild card era, Texas Rangers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even feel comfortable grading this because I don't know how unprecedented it is. And I fear that this is more common than we realize, but it is a good point. And I mean, Robert Garcia, I know he pitched for Mexico. He's U.S., you know, he's American born. Their, I guess, you know, Alejandro Ozuna, he's Mexican. Their bench coach, Luis Urieta, is Colombian. Oh, so you got a little bit of, a little bit of culture there. But yeah, DEI, I mean, it's a great point. It's exactly. It's a great point. But I don't even noted storyline to watch question mark.
Sacramento A's.
Nick Yolo Kurtz, County, baby.
Nick Kurtz, 500-foot home run.
I think regular bold. I think he's already come pretty close to this. In
493 last year, yes.
Oh, then cold. And cold. I thought it was like 483. I think in Sacramento,
This is 550 foot home run.
Okay, then see, it's funny. Now we're courageous. No, that's not how it works. This is the same thing as the Caminero one. You were already too close to the answer that cold. So sorry. All right. If you had said like Jacob Wilson 500 foot homer, now we're talking. Now we're listening. Now we're saying Jacob now Wilson, we're being courageous.
500 foot single. Okay. We will do the Houston Astros. What did the Houston Astros do at the deadline last year? Traded for Carlos Correa.
Oh.
What did they do at the deadline? They bought Carlos Correa.
They didn't really trade for him. Yeah.
They said, we'll take that back. A couple years ago, what did they do at the deadline? They reacquired Justin Verlander. And I will say that at the deadline this year, the Houston Astros will trade for George Springer. Former Houston Astro and impending free agent George Springer within my bold prediction timeline. The Blue Jays are not very good, clearly. And Springer's $24 million contract, yes. But the Blue Jays will eat some of that money just to get a prospect back. What prospect will they get back considering the Astros might have the worst farm system in the sport? Don't care. Talk about that another time. Is there a spot for him? Not at DH. But in the outfield.
Oh, yeah.
In left.
Oh, yeah. In the outfield.
In left field.
Oh, absolutely.
There is a spot for him. So I'm going to say the right Astros field. Acquire George Springer at the trade deadline.
I think this is your best work, particularly with the synergy of the Blue Jays prediction is beautiful stuff. Yep. So
thank you.
And these teams have made trades not that long ago, right? I mean, they just did the Jesus Sanchez one. So when that one's not good enough, George Springer back to Houston. Excellent. Bold.
Thank you.
I mean, it's still bordering on courageous because of how much has to happen for this to take place. But because of what you laid out there, I'll give you regular bold and just well done. Well done.
Cal Raleigh of the Seattle Mariners alongside Randy Arozarena of the Seattle Mariners. Cal and Randy publicly reconcile, and we get a Cal-Randy handshake bobblehead giveaway day in September. Cal Raleigh and Randy Arozarena, who did not shake hands because Cal wasn't down, and then Randy yelled at him in public. They figure things out. They patch up their relationship, and we get it's like Cal squatting in the Team USA gear and Randy in the Mexico gear fist bumping at home plate.
This is so good. I think the most annoying response I could give you is you need more lead time on a bobblehead production, and I don't think they can put this together by September. However, if anyone could, it is the Mariners. Like, this is something, this is right up their alley in terms of just like getting a tone, making the most of a situation. And so I could imagine like them making some sort of content around this, but a bobblehead is courageous. That is a complicated
you know why
to go this ahead is courageous? And produce in season.
Yeah. You know why this is courageous? I don't think they're gonna be okay. I don't think
well that was the other part about this. Yeah.
Do I think the Mariners as an organization are going to be able to overcome the Cal Randy strife? Yes. Do I think that Cal and Randy are going to be friends to the point that they would be okay with this bobblehead? No, I do not. All right. My last bold prediction, Jordan. Los Angeles Angels. Mike Trout, MVP.
Not MVP votes. Like, we are winning MVP. He's just all the way back.
Mike Trout, MVP. All the way back. Judge misses 30 games. Judge's numbers are like better than Trout's, but Trout just has the narrative juice. He's back.
What's the narrative?
He's back. The narrative is he's back, baby. He popped a 30 sprint speed, feet per second in spring this week, running down the line. He's back in center field. I think he's going to steal 25 bases and he's going to pop 45 ding dongs and Mike Trout MVP. Book it. In center.
Oh, right. Back in center. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I do know, I am curious. Like, I don't know where you'd have to set the line, like Mike Trout top five MVP, Mike Trout top, for me to say bold and not courageous. But
okay. So it's funny
Mike
you
Trout
say that.
Winning, yeah, winning his fourth MVP is absolutely a courageous prediction.
I did write down Mike Trout MVP finalist, and then I was like, you know what? We only get one life to live. I'm going to delete finalist.
I had a couple of those in mind too. I was like, yeah, screw it. Let's ride.
All right, Jordan.
Great work.
Before I toss you the rock, I'll speed run these. Giancarlo steals a base. The Jays finish under 500. Garrett Crochet, 230 innings. Junior Caminero, most double plays in a single season in MLB history. Pete Alonso weeps uncontrollably on return to Citi Field. Byron Buxton, 160-game season. Royals win 100 games. Luis Ortiz of gambling scandal fame appears in an MLB game. The Pope shows up and attends a White Sox game. Framber Valdez with a lower ERA than Tarek Skubal. The Astros trade for George Springer at the deadline. We get a Cal Raleigh and Randy Arozarena handshake bobblehead. The Rangers have the most American lineup of all time. Nick Kurtz hits a 550-foot home run. Mike Trout wins the MVP. These are my bold predictions. Let us know yours. They won't be as bold as mine.
We're going to take a break when we return. National League, my turn to get bold. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I just crushed it. I crushed it with my bold predictions, going 15 for 15. Hopefully, when the season ends, I went the right number is 1 for 15. I hope that I get one of the 15 correct. If I get more than that correct, I was not bold enough, and I will bike to Chicago as punishment. Jordan, it is time to do the National League. That is your responsibility. Take it away.
We begin in the National League East, and I don't know what order I will go in, but let's just go in a kind of random order by division. We begin in Miami. This is a simple one. Sandy Alcantara traded in April. What do you think about that one?
I think it's pretty reasonable, actually. I mean, actually, I'll say it's bold because the Marlins are only going to trade Sandy if they feel like they can get a lot back for him, and they probably don't think they can pump up his value in April. Like, what would he have to do to get traded in April?
It's going to involve some other team to really be freaking out and need to do something ridiculous. But I don't think Peter Bendix will care if the right offer shows up on April 21st. That, which is why I am considering this plausible, but traded in April is right. Because Arise got traded like the first week of May, I want to say.
May.
That was a little bit of a different situation, but we've seen it before. Okay. Sandy traded in April. We'll see. All right. So that's regular bold. New York Mets. This is a tribute to one of your predictions in our 2022 series. You said Luis Robert Jr., 10 war season. I will just say Luis Robert Jr. leads the Mets in war.
Oh.
How do you feel about that? How are we feeling about that one?
I think that is courageous for one reason, three syllables. Juan Soto is on the Mets. Juan Soto is good for like 5.5 to 6.5 wins if by just like existing. And it's hard to imagine that Juan Soto's defense gets worse. I mean, maybe it does, but I am also uber in on Luis Robert Jr. this year, as I will talk about during our fantasy segment. This is great, though. No notes. Great bold prediction. Leading the Mets in war. This is courageous.
Yeah, it is. It's a little. Soto makes it pretty difficult to stomach as realistic, but we will take it. All right. Let's go with a couple of pitching ones in two very different directions. We begin with the Washington Nationals. I believe that the Washington Nationals, again, I'll caveat this. I believe in the new infrastructure. I wish all of the new people in charge, the players, coaches, front office, the best.
This sounds like it's going to be really positive.
However, I'm going to say that the Washington Nationals are going to allow the most home runs by a team ever, excluding 2019 when the ball was juiced. Now that record, because the top four all time are all 2019, 305 by the Orioles. There were a few other teams, 2019. The record for most home runs allowed non-2019 division is tied by the 2021 Orioles and the 2016 Reds at 258. Last year, the Rockies allowed 251. The reason I am saying that the Nationals are a candidate for this, even if they realize that maybe we shouldn't be throwing this many fastballs, is just the personnel involved. Jake Irvin allowed 38 home runs last year. They just signed Zach Littell, who allowed 36. So you already have the top two from last season in the rotation, and also Miles Michaelis throwing 86 miles an hour. Foster Griffin coming back from Japan. Is he getting ground balls in Japan? Yes. Is he going to be getting as many ground balls in MLB? I'm going to say fewer than that. And then the bullpen is about as anonymous of a group as we've ever seen before.
Yeah.
So all that together, I'm going to say that they are going to, maybe they will make some gains in other regards to their maybe strikeout to walk and whatever, but I think there will be many balls leaving the yard from the Washington Nationals, specifically more than 258.
I think this is bold just because Nats Park is not a place where balls go over the fence. If you look at the other two names that you mentioned, the Reds and the Orioles, that's Camden Yards pre-fence moving back, right? And that's Cincinnati where I could go yard. And so I think that combined with being in the same division as the Marlins, who don't hit any home runs, who they will play 13 times, I think that this is completely bold. The Nats pitching will not be good, but it is hard to envision any pitching staff being this bad.
Yeah, and they only allowed 214 last year. And I will point out, they have the lowest spring training ERA in baseball, the Washington Nationals right now. So how about that? So, see? Oh, maybe it's courageous. Huh? Anyway, we move on to the Philadelphia Phillies. A couple weeks ago,
my Phillies win for last year was Brandon Marsh gets a haircut.
Yes. Didn't happen. Courageous.
Nope. Missed it.
A few weeks ago, Jake, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a pitcher in college baseball for Clemson University named Michael Sharman, who threw a complete game on 78 pitches.
Yeah. Yeah.
78 pitch complete game. And I'm going to say that Christopher Sanchez is going to replicate this feat and deliver
great.
The first complete game in under 80 pitches since Aaron Cook. Aaron Cook in 2009. Okay, is the last guy to do it. 79 pitches. And yeah, this is really hard to do. I will point out, though, that Framber Valdez had an 83 pitch complete game last year. And I believe they won on a walk-off. So that one almost went 10. But I think Sanchez and Framber are a good parallel for just like the skill set that is required to have a game like this. And so, yeah, sub 80 pitch complete game, Christopher Sanchez.
This is really good. You got to pick it against, I'll say courageous. A team that swings a lot and swings early, an aggressive club that's going to put balls in play and keep the pitch count down. If I'm looking at swing rate from last year, Tampa, Seattle, Minnesota, Chicago, the Cubs, that's perfect. It'll be a windy day, wind howling in at Wrigley. Christopher Sanchez gets some early fly balls, even though he doesn't do that. But this is great. No notes.
Yeah, we'll need some BABIP luck for sure. Okay, the next one, I don't want to come across as too. I hope people don't take this the wrong way. Okay, but I think it's perfectly bold for the exercise, and it is very simple. It's the Atlanta Braves. Matt Olson misses a game. Matt Olson just misses a game. Very simple. Matt Olson's streak of games played. This is nothing serious. I'm not wishing a serious injury on him. Okay. I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe he just, you know, has the sniffles and can't get out of bed. But for some reason, Matt Olson does not play a baseball game. And that is significant because Matt Olson has played 782 games in a row. He passed Pete Rose last year. He's 12th all time. If he plays 162 again this year, he will be 8th all time. He'll be within striking distance of 1,000. But I think if for some reason, it just ends. It's just over this year. Doesn't happen. Matt Olson misses a game. What do you think? Has to be bold. He hasn't missed a game in 5 years.
Bold, yeah, it's bold. I'm thinking of other reasons he could miss a game. Like maybe he could have a kid. Could he have a kid?
So I had that thought. I believe he welcomed his first child last December or two Decembers ago, which does not seem like an accident. I'm just going to say that. That feels
Matt Olson December baby.
It feels like It feels like Matt Olson is like, listen, if we're going to have a child, it is not going to be during the season because I got this streak going on. So I don't think it'll be that, but, you know, who's to say?
All right.
Matt Olson is a game. We go to the National League Central. This one, I just couldn't. Cubs, I was just being pulled in a lot of different directions. So I don't really know how I feel about this one, but we'll go with it.
What about I'm thinking Alex a lot about Bregman gets even shorter. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. We'll get to that later. Nico Horner is someone I'm thinking a lot about this season. Nico Horner, 200 hits, and he signs the largest contract of any free agent not named Tarek Skubal before the lockout. All right. So it's an interesting quiz. You know, he's right now, he's like in the mix. There's some other guys up there at the top of the free agent list, depending on opt-outs and whatever. I just think Nico Horner's going to have a huge season and he's going to get super paid and he's going to get a lot of money before the lockout. There you go. So this one we won't be able to grade until he signs. Cold?
Yeah, I'm going to say cold for that reason.
200 hits also has only happened a few times.
200 hits is a ton of hits, but I'm saying cold because you did one of these last year where it was like contingent on a free agent signing. And I think that is just not the exercise that we're doing.
Okay.
This is bold predictions for the season. That is not the season. I'm going to give you a cold for this one as a result. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Fair enough. 200 hits is a lot of hits. We go to the St. Louis Cardinals. Dustin May, all-star.
Oh.
Now, he's never made the all-star team. He was very bad for two different teams last season. But someone's going to have to be an all-star in the Cardinals. It will probably be a hitter. That's however, true. I'm trying to be bold. So I'm going to say Dustin May will be maybe not the only Cardinals all-star, but he will make his first all-star team with the St. Louis Cardinals.
That is bold. I had a very lovely hour-long conversation with Dustin May in spring training, and so now he is in the list of people I think about. So yeah, Dustin May, all-star. Book it.
I want to, yeah, we'll see. I'm curious about Cardinals pitching. Nobody else is, but I am. So we'll see how that goes. All right, good. That's appropriately bold. Milwaukee Brewers. Bryce Tarang and Jackson Chourio both go 30-30.
Has that ever happened?
So it would only be the fourth time ever that a team has two 30-30 seasons. The first time it happened was 1987 Mets, Howard Johnson, Daryl Strawberry. 1996 Rockies, Dante Bichette, Ellis Burks. And last year, the New York Metropolitans with Francisco Lindor and Juan Soto. However, Bryce Tarang, this would be quite the leap in terms of home run production. After watching him take BP with Team USA, let's do it. I'm in on Bryce Tarang. Let's go.
I will say courageous because I'm not buying the Bryce Tarang power jump. I know his BP is great. I don't think it's going to actualize into games. If you look at how he was hitting those home runs last year, it was all pretty like bunched up in August. He just kind of got hot. I'm going to take the under on whatever over-under home runs you give me for Tarang. So I'll say that this is courageous. However, the Jackson Chourio breakout is coming at some point, and hopefully it is this season.
Pittsburgh Pirates. Here's the one that I think one-ups your Fromber over Skubal, and I will say Bubba Chandler lower ERA than Paul Skeens.
This is great. This is better than mine. Courageous. Thank you for coming. Good job. No notes.
I think that the Pirates defense could lead to some strange numbers for their pitching staff. Now, how that impacts earned runs, Paul Skeens, Bubba Chandler, whatever. I'm just all in on Bubba. This is not like fading Paul Skeens, really. I'm just all in on Bubba. So that's really what this is. But again, Paul Skeens is off to the greatest run prevention start in like the history of starting pitching. So I think that this is still probably pretty courageous. All right, Cincinnati Reds. This is one that I'm very invested in. It's very simple. Ellie De La Cruz hits one to the Ohio River, clearing the seats in right field. He has not done it yet. Juan Francisco, the last guy to do it, famously 2011.
Is it because Ellie's not hitting it high enough? He's hitting it hard enough.
Yeah, not last year, right? This is really a bet on he's now healthy. He's now absolutely jacked, like even more than he was. I mean, he's been playing pretty lanky the last couple of years, and he's showing up with a little more muscle. And I just think he's healthy. He's come close enough to doing it before. And I think this is the time to finally happen. So he's going to
this
going,
is bold.
Getting wet.
This is bold. Didn't we have one year where we were like, blah, blah is the first right-handed hitter to put one in the drink at San Francisco Stadium. And then Elliot Ramos did it.
Yeah, I don't know who we would have picked. I don't know if that was ever in this series or it was in something else, but yeah, this one. And also like that Juan Francisco homer, I'm so excited about that. I've like asked Ellie about that because, you know, Juan Francisco is a Dominican Winter League icon. He's the home run king back home in DR. And so Ellie is aware that that is something that is he knows it's something that he can do and wants to do. And I think it's going to happen this year. There's my bold prediction. We go to the National League West and we begin with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Fresh off his blown call to end the Dominican Republic's run where Geraldo Perdomo could not challenge, he will lead baseball in correct ABS challenges.
Oh,
Geraldo Perdomo. He will be at the top.
That's
he
awesome.
Will be, have the most correct. And we will just continue to watch that blown call from Corey Blazer over and over and over. Every time Geraldo Perdomo taps his head and is correct, we will just continue to which will make it all feel so much better.
This
and
is
so
beautiful.
Much worse.
Wonderful. This is what a bold prediction should aspire to be. This is courageous. The narrative is perfect. it taps into a player's skill set. Jordan, I'm very proud of you.
Okay. But regular bold, because it's very plausible. I mean, I think he's going to be good at this. He's going to be batting leadoff.
This is
right?
Hinged.
So he's going to be.
This prediction is hinged. It's a good hinged prediction. It is not unhinged.
Los Angeles Dodgers spent like an hour trying to come up with an Ohtani one. At this point, there's nothing bold with Ohtani. So maybe this one's a little simple, but I like this one. Edwin Diaz has another 57 save season. Now, nobody has even gotten to 50 saves since Jurys Familia in 2016. Ryan Helsley had 49 in 2024. Of course, the record, K-Rod, 2008, 62. Edwin Diaz, second on the all-time list, 2018, 57 saves. And I will say that Edwin Diaz does it again. He matches or exceeds his previous second all-time total of 57 saves.
Here's why this is not bold. Because the Dodgers are going to win many baseball games this year. Here's why this is bold. The Dodgers are not going to like run Edwin Diaz back recklessly to ensure that he is getting save opportunities all the time. They are comfortable just letting another guy do it, as evidenced by the recent past. In order to get to that type of save level, you need to be on a team that needs you to pitch all the time. And the Dodgers don't need him to do that. And so for that reason, I will give you a bold here.
Yeah, I think that point is, I thought about that. What I'm going with is that Dave Roberts is going to just really soak in the comfort of Edwin Diaz that he did not have the last few seasons.
He has not had this since
Kenley.
Himself. Yeah.
He can't help himself. He's just going to keep going back to him, even though he probably doesn't need to. So that's why I think that the total could be inflated. But it's fair. And also, it's kind of wild. Like, and obviously, a lot of this has to do with the Mets or the Mets. But Diaz hasn't – like, do you know what his season high is other than 57? It's kind of wild in retrospect. But
probably like 34 or something.
Yeah, 32. Well, it was 34 in Seattle the year before, 32 with the Mets he did twice. So only 28 last year. So it's hard to get up there. It's just not really how closers work nowadays. But I think Dave Roberts is going to be like, this is fun. Here, Edwin Diaz, come save the game again. All right, we have three more. San Diego Padres. Here's another pitching one. This is something that I cannot believe has not happened yet in Major League Baseball. And I think it finally does. And that is the combined perfect game. This is the year, folks. We finally see a combined perfect game, whether we like it or not. And the San Diego Padres are the perfect candidate. It will be a starting, you know, Randy Vasquez will duck and dodge his way through five perfect innings somehow.
It cannot be Randy Vasquez, dude.
It can't be Randy Vasquez. It's going to have to be Pivetta or whatever. But the starter does not have to do much. But this bullpen with Mason Miller and Morjon and Estrada and David Morgan will go bang, 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 bang. Perfect game, complete game, perfect game combined. Mason Miller finishes it off. There you go. San Diego Padres combined perfect game.
Great job. Outrageous, courageous. In play, though, because this offense I don't think will be very good. And so it will be a game where the offense is not scoring and therefore the bullpen needs to use all of the A relievers to keep things close. This is perfect. 10 out of 10.
And I think Freddie Fermin is like, he's a perfect catcher for the combined perfect game. I've always looked at Freddie Fermin and I thought, that guy's going to catch a combined perfect game someday.
Me too.
He's on it. I thought about like mixing in that they'll win it on a ABS challenge because Freddie Fermin's been like 12 for 12 in those. This spring training, but whatever. Okay, combined perfect game. Two more. Giants and Rockies. We'll finish with the Rockies because, of course. San Francisco Giants. I thought for a long time about what my Tony V prediction is going to be. Do I believe this one? I don't know. I'm really conflicted on it, but I'm going to do it. Tony V, zero ejections. Zero ejections for Tony Vitello. I could have gone in the other direction and said like 15 ejections. I'm going to say zero ejections.
This is great.
This is obviously courageous for many reasons.
It's the equivalent
of
like, so it's almost like if you invite me to like a gala, like a black tie event where I don't belong, where I'm new here, I will be on my best behavior, right? I will be performatively responsible with my actions, even though I am something of a wild card character. In the context of a certain event, I will up my game and not necessarily be myself. And I think that this is very possible. I will say Tony Vitello has one ejection. I think that the one ejection will be, he'll go bonkers in June and be embarrassed by it and then not do anything again.
The funniest thing about this one is I came up with a whole different range of ejection ones, right? I thought of like Tony V gets ejected before first pitch. I thought of Tony V, you know, gets sets a record for a jet, whatever. And then I was like, you know what? No, let's go in the other direction. I think that the logic you just laid out and why I thought that, okay, maybe this is possible, that he, as you said, will be on his best behavior. The reason why I think even if that happens, there are going to be umpires that are essentially excited to throw him out for even the smallest thing. And so that, I think, is going to ruin it regardless of how well behaved he is. So there was, and fun fact, there was only one manager last year who managed all 162 and was not ejected once. It was Stephen Vogt.
Mark Kotze.
Kotze. He's got some fire. And I believe Vogt only has one ejection since he became the Guardians manager, but he was flawless last season. So this is hard to do for anybody, to be clear. So this is definitely courageous, but it's a fun one. And it's honestly, I think, more fun to track than
him getting a little hot. Like, you see Vitello getting a little hot. You're like, hey, simmer down now, Tony.
All right. Last one. We're going to end on a positive note. Colorado Rockies. Last year, Jake said that the Rockies would go winless against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And they, I believe, won two games, three.
Gave it their best shot. They went went 0-7 to start, and then they took, I believe, two of a four game set at home.
Yeah.
And then they lost all the other ones.
So yeah, 2-11 last season against the Dodgers. I am gonna go in the other direction here. And I'm going to say that the Colorado Rockies will win one of their series at Dodger Stadium. Go in early May and early July. They last won a series at Dodger Stadium in 2020 in front of nobody. So I should have checked when they last won a series before that. Although remember, the Rockies were like making the playoffs before then, so I imagine it wasn't that far before then. But it has been a while since they won a series at Dodger Stadium. But somehow, some way, by the grace of Chase Dolander pitching on the road, and Troy Johnston or whoever is in the lineup, WBC champion Ezekiel Tovar will lead the Colorado Rockies to victory in a series at Dodger Stadium. And it will be glorious.
Wow.
The California Post will come up with a wonderful headline involving the Dodgers losing a series at home to the Rockies. There you go.
So the last time the Dodgers won a series, The last time the Rockies stink. The last time the Rockies won a series in Chavez Ravine was late June of 2018. They clinched that series on June 30th, 2018, with a 3-1 win. Herman Marquez, 8 strong, 1 earned. Ian Desmond took Kenta Maeda deep in that one.
Oh my gosh.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and they're when they won the series in 2020, it was a rousing 7-6 victory, 3 hits from Raimel Tapia. We got a Joshua Fuentes home run off Julio Urias. So it's been a while, folks, but this is the year for the Rockies of Colorado. We did it. We were bold, but we have more podcasts to do. We are going to take a break when we return Fantasy Baseball and the Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Opening day is less than a week away. That is a horrifying thing. I can't wrap my mind around it. I'm slowly decompressing from the WBC, and yet the real season is rapidly approaching. What better time? You're running out of time, frankly, to draft your fantasy baseball team. So for this segment, before we do Good, Bad, Ugla, we're going to do a little fantasy baseball chatter. And important to note, we're doing a fantasy listener league again.
A couple years ago, we had a baseball Barbiecast invitational. Jake and I were a part of it. We solicited, you know, applications via email. We said, okay, tell us why you should be in the league. We made a very goofy league with ridiculous scoring involving like fielding percentage and bunts and sack flies and, you know, batter's face and all kinds of wild stuff. This year, folks, we're playing it straight. Three catchers in like a 16-team league. This year, we're doing it much more simple. Five catchers, 25-team league. No, just kidding. This year, if you want to join the Baseball Barbiecast Fantasy League, let me know. We are drafting, and by we, I mean me, because I'm the commissioner. Jake doesn't have time for my nonsense this year. Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. The size of the league TBD, because if we get an overwhelming amount of requests, I might squeeze in more than 10 or 12 or 14. Straight rotisserie, of course, on Yahoo Fantasy, a 12, 14, 16 team roto league drafting Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. And if you're interested in joining this league, baseballbarbicast@gmail.com. BARBcast@gmail.com. Let me know why you should be in the league. If I get hundreds of responses, I might just go random number generator. If we get less than that, I might pick my favorites. But I would love to do another league this year. So make sure you go sign up, yahoofantasy.com/baseball. I will, of course, send those invites out to the Yahoo Fantasy League if you let us know. So baseballbarbicast@gmail.com if you want to join the Fantasy League. Drafting next Tuesday before the first game of the season on Wednesday. We will get into it. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of an edge. If you're in this league and you're wondering, oh, who's Jordan going to draft? I'm basically about to tell you, because what we're going to do is take a look at the latest fantasy rankings, courtesy of Scott Pianowski and Fred Zinke at Yahoo Sports on Yahoo Fantasy. And we're just going to go a little range by range and tell you players that we are all in on this season to be fantasy stars, real life stars, stars in our hearts, stars in our minds. Jake Mintz, where would you like to begin?
We'll do one player from 0 to 100 on the list, one from 101 to 200, one from 201 to the end of the list, and then one player not on the list at all, and one player in the top 50 that we're out on. Let's start at the top and do a player 0 to 100 that we believe in. I will let you go first.
I am going to go with Jackson Merrill. I am a firm believer that Jackson Merrill was just going through it last year. He had a concussion. He had another injury that was hampering him. And he was just way too good as a rookie. What he did as a rookie, he got votes for rookie of the year over Paul Skenes by smart people. Said, yeah, no, Jackson Merrill better than Paul Skenes. I wouldn't have done that vote, but I get it because he was that good. And it's just hard for me to believe that you could be that good, that young, that fast, and not be on a trajectory towards like super duper mega stardom. Right now, he's ranked 50th on the fantasy rankings that the latest fantasy rankings that we are taking a look at are kind of in the 40 to 50 range. I know it's kind of fluctuated, but it would not surprise me at all if he ends up being, especially in fantasy where like batting average is important, hits are important. Maybe he's not going to run that much, but I think he's going to be back up there getting MVP votes this year. I'm all in on Merrill for 2026.
I will go with Ben Rice. Ben Rice, who is kind of in the 80-ish range, 85 on this Yahoo list. Ben Rice has catcher eligibility.
Ooh, wow.
If you think about Ben Rice as a catcher, I think he has to be considered a top five offensive catcher in the game. And there were few players last year that were like unluckier from a expected quality of contact versus actual statistical output perspective than Ben Rice. Like he was a top 10 unlucky player in the sport. His Baseball Savant page is redder than a Montana congressional district. I think that he is only going to continue to improve and could very much end the year as like a top three catcher in the sport in terms of fantasy purposes. So I'm all in on Ben Rice.
That is a very good one. Ben Rice ranked 85 on this ranking. Just to clarify, Merrill 54. So yeah, that's a good one. I mean, and it sounds like he's going to be in the lineup basically every day. I mean, he'll have the eligibility. I don't think he can lose the eligibility for this year, but just like quickly, how many games do you think he actually catches? I know that doesn't really matter for fantasy, but
like 20. It doesn't matter.
Okay, 20. Like, I know it doesn't matter.
And I think, I just think like he's going to be the everyday first baseman. I think they want him to hit against lefties. I know that they brought Paul Goldschmidt back, but I do think he's going to get enough at bats against lefties to make it worth it.
We go to the 100 to 200 range. And I'm going to go to a pitcher ranked on this list at 156, and that is new Orioles closer Ryan Helsley. I know relievers are volatile. I know it was very ugly for him with the Mets after the trade last season, but this is another one where this was not just a good reliever. This was a reliever getting Cy Young votes. This was a reliever who was as dominant as essentially any reliever over multiple seasons. Maybe he doesn't get quite back to that, but it would not surprise me at all if this is just the saves leader in baseball again. I just mentioned earlier that he had 49 a few years ago. And in this Orioles bullpen in particular, like, he's the guy. There's really not going to be any other competition for him. That is why they signed him so quickly. And I'm sure why he signed there to rack up saves. So that is obviously important in fantasy. And I just believe that the Orioles are going to get this guy cooking again. And I think he's going to be awesome. So I think he could just be the number one closer in fantasy baseball. So yeah, if you're getting him that late, that seems pretty good.
I will go with Luis Robert Jr., who Jordan said earlier on this podcast will lead the Mets in wins above replacement. Luis Robert Jr. at 113 on this list. For me, this is really a bet on the Mets infrastructure, both from the medical side and from the coaching player development side. I think this is still one of the most talented players in the world, and I trust the Mets to, one, keep him a little bit healthier and monitor his workload better than the White Sox were doing, and two, from like a playing perspective, just get more out of the skill set here. I mean, even last year when he wasn't very good, he homered 14 times and stole 33 bags. Like, I think I would take the over on both of those numbers. This season, he's going to be playing pretty much every day in center field. And his sprint speed is still in the 90th percentile. He's still an elite defender, which gives him the floor where it's like they'll let him play every day, even if he's not hitting at the beginning, because he's providing value defensively. I think there's a chance Robert ends the season as like a top 50 player in fantasy.
And even last year when he was bad and not caring, because why would you on the White Sox? 33 steals, right? Which was a career high. Yep. So I don't see why that can't be 40 or 50 this season if he's playing on a team that's trying to win stuff. So even if the rest of the offense, you know, bounces back to like average, that is going to be a heck of a fantasy player. So that is a very good pick. We go to the 200 to the end of the list. There are about 350 names listed on this list that we're looking at. So we'll go off the list here. I'm going to go to 261. It's Mike Burrows with the Houston Astros. Mike Burrows last year, kind of his first year back from Tommy John, just got better as the season went on. And they flip him to Houston as part of that three-way trade to get more offense. But Houston is a place that knows how to get outs. And they know how to get outs with guys that do not have stuff as good as Mike Burrows. So I'm also very interested in Tetsuya Imai, but I'm going to go with Burrows, someone who has already had some major league success, who's another year removed from surgery, and who's on a team that knows what they're doing. So the Astros defense is kind of a weird mix, because you have some like super elite defenders in like Jake Myers and Christian Walker and Correa and Pena. But then you also have like whatever the hell's going on at second base, and the corner outfield could be like very bad. And also the catching is maybe not awesome. So it's kind of a weird blend from that standpoint in terms of run prevention, but I'm very in on Mike Burrows this year, and I think he will be well into the top 200, if not even higher, by the end of the season.
I will take one of the most polarizing prospects in the sport, and that is Justin Crawford of the Philadelphia Phillies. Justin Crawford ranked at 272 on this list. He is going to be the everyday center fielder for the Philadelphia Phillies. He is going to play. They cleared the way for him. They believe in him. Do I believe in him? I'm not totally sure. I think I do. Justin Crawford stole 46 bases last season. He stole 42 the year before that, 47 the year before that. He hits the ball very hard, and he hits it on the ground. And that's one good thing and one bad thing. I think he's got the wheels to get on base enough to provide enough steals to hit at the bottom of this lineup and be a productive player. Does he need to hit 334 like he did in the minors last year? No. Will he hit 334? Almost certainly not. If this guy gets on, he got on base last year, Jordan, at a 411 clip in AAA over a full season. If he gets on base at a 365 clip, he's still going to be valuable enough with his legs that I think it's worth getting this guy on your roster. And there's just a lot of upside here too. Like, the physicality is real. This is not like a Chandler Simpson slash and dash type athlete. Like, he is bigger and stronger than that. He hits the ball hard. He just goes on the ground. If he can start to unlock some things and get in the air a little bit more, I think Justin Crawford could be a monster. Analysts hate him because he hits the ball on the ground like so much. Scouts that I talk to really love him. He's just such an interesting dude, but I lean towards yes on Justin Crawford.
That is valid. Let's go to off the list entirely. A lot of pitchers that are not on this list of 341 top fantasy players. And I sorted through a bunch. I'm going to go with one actually kind of interesting transition off of the one you just went. I'm going to go with Mick Abel. Mick Abel of the Minnesota Twins. This is also maybe one buying into what's been going on in spring training, which I, you know, spent yesterday catching up on. But the stuff for him has looked pretty awesome. And he should get every chance with the Minnesota Twins. Is he going to be racking up wins with the Twins? You know, I could see that maybe being an issue. But I believe in the stuff. I believe in the change of scenery. And it's just one that, like, there's a lot of pitchers you can kind of sort through, like, way, way, way down in the rankings that are going to be in the rotation for sure. That if you just pick the right ones, like, you're going to be in pretty good shape. That is, if I am going to give any amount of fantasy advice, like, there's always pitchers towards the end that there's real upside to find. It's much harder to find hitters that you know for sure are going to play and are going to produce. Whereas there's a million dart throws you can have later on with pitchers where you can be like, oh yeah, if that guy's just in the rotation, he could be awesome. And I think Mick Abel's an interesting one. So of all those Twins young pitchers, I think he has the most upside. And so I hope to see that realized here in 2026.
I have two third basemen that I'm picking between, and I'm just going to say both of them. How about that? Brady House of the Washington Nationals and Max Muncy of the Sacramento Athletics. So,
wow.
Brady House.
Wow.
Yep. Okay. You like
bold,
that?
Courageous.
Okay. The reason I have both of these guys here is because they're both going to be playing every day to start the season. And neither of their teams, neither of their employers, the A's or the Nats, have better options at third base. Neither of these teams are going to be winning a lot of baseball games, in my opinion. And so both of these teams have every incentive necessary to let these young third basemen work through their lumps and figure things out at the big league level. When I was down at Nats camp, I asked their new skipper, Blake Butera, and a bunch of, you know, coaching staff, front office people, who they're most excited about that they weren't necessarily expecting. And they were all in on Brady House. Former top 10 pick, looked terrible in the big leagues last year, but he's still really physical. There are swing and miss issues, I understand. But Brady House is someone not on this list that I'm interested in. And then Max Muncy, not the Dodgers one, the A's one, has been scorching it in spring training. Like you said, I'm updating myself on spring training. He is fourth in OPS in spring training. And so that is obviously replicable during the regular season. Obviously, it's not. I just think that, look, if you're looking for an everyday, a young, talented player that's going to get everyday opportunities, I like Muncy and I like Brady House. Muncy more of a high floor, House more high upside.
Yes, yes. Andy Ibañez with the A's could maybe snag some of that playing time if Muncy continues to struggle, but it's fair. And the A's track record of producing these hitters is pretty good. Like Muncy was the only one really that wasn't hitting really last year, and hitting in Yolo County seems like a good time. So those are good. Those are bold. I actually quite like those. So now let's get a little sour here. We made this kind of a tough ask. Someone in the top 50 that we don't believe in. I would say this is relative. This is not like this player sucks. It's more like I wouldn't draft this player in the top 50 or the top 20 or 30. That is, I should clarify that. And I'll go first. I'm going to go Francisco Lindor. This is very simple. I'll buy into the it's not that simple to come back from hamate surgery. I know he has made his way back and has already been playing in spring training games. But I just think, are you agreeing or disagreeing? Or this was going to be your pick too?
I am neither agreeing nor disagreeing. And I am just saying, so we sent our picks already to our producer, Andrew Hartz. And I picked Corbin Carroll for the exact same reason. Corbin Carroll, who also got the surgery. I am more concerned about Carroll than Lindor just because of Corbin Carroll in the past has shown that like when he has these little injuries, he can get out from his mechanics and kind of get lost a little bit.
It's a good point.
Where I think Lindor is less likely to do that. Lindor and Carroll, I would both fade just because of the hamate. I would fade Cal Raleigh is another name on this list.
That's not at 20. That's like the I mean, that's not that complicated. Like he's still going to lead catchers in home runs, and that's valuable. But 60 is probably not happening again. So
here's another one: Manny Machado. Manny Machado during the World Baseball Classic, his bat. There are some times where a guy hits a certain age, and you see him swing, and you're like, that is not what that used to look like. Like Manny Machado's bat speed has just kind of gotten to a point where I would fade him in the top 50.
When we've decided we were going to do this, my first instinct was Machado. And then I went back and looked at what he was doing last season. And I was like, no, still crushing the ball. Like still, I agree with you. Like he was on my mind for sure. But I don't know. The underlying stuff with him is still pretty good, all things considered. So, but it's an interesting one. All right. Reminder, 8 p.m. Eastern next Tuesday will be the Baseball Barbercast Fantasy Draft. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, if you want to join or start your own league on the Yahoo Fantasy app. Go make it happen. yahoofantasy.com/baseball. Jake Mintz, it's Friday. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly.
I will begin with my good. Fernando Tatis gets his green tea sponsorship. So at the WBC, they had green tea, a brand that I'm going to say, you know what? A brand that will remain nameless because we're not sponsored by them. They had the green tea up on the podium. And for the first couple press conferences, the Dominican team would move them out of the way very jokingly. And Juan Soto would like put his Celsius up there instead because he gets paid by them. And then at one point, Fernando Tatis Jr. realized that if he started drinking the green tea and smiling into the camera, that he might get a green tea sponsorship. And that's exactly what happened as Fernando Tatis was contacted by the green tea company and now is selling green tea. This is the green tea that Otani is like associated with, and his face is all over in Japan. You see it everywhere when you're there. I will say, on our way out of the ballpark after the championship game, we were the last people in the stadium and we were locked inside Lone Depot Park. And the only way to leave was through the press conference room. And as we left the press conference room at 4 a.m., there was one of these green teas on the dais. And I said, I'm taking that. So I took it. And then the next morning, I think you can see on the podcast we record in the morning, I'm drinking it because I needed caffeine. This was not for me. I did not love these. I think you would like them even less, Jordan. Very unsweetened, like incredibly unsweetened.
Just happy for Tatis. He didn't get to bat some money. With the game on the line. He didn't right. He didn't get to hit with the game on the line because Corey Blazer decided he wasn't going to, but he got the bag, the tea bag. Got the tea bag. There you go.
Tea bag.
My good this week is all the WBC champions on Team Venezuela returning to their respective spring training camps and wearing their Venezuela jerseys. A lot of great moments involving this team in the hours, days since they won it all. Omar Lopez, Carlos Mendoza hugging it out in Florida was awesome. Carlos Mendoza, the Mets manager, was on the WBC staff in 2023 and obviously has a close relationship with Omar Lopez. But Michael Garcia just being like, yeah, no, I think the quote was, I've only taken it off to sleep. And otherwise, this is the only thing I'm going to wear essentially until opening day, maybe, is exactly how you should be handling this when you just won the WBC for the first time. So shouts out to those players. It has been so fun to see them celebrate in every possible way.
Bad for me. The opening day schedule this year absolutely sucks ass. This is pointless, and I hate it. The Yankees and Giants will open up on Wednesday night before everyone else on Thursday. That's really not a big deal for me. I don't mind that at all. But on Thursday, on opening day, there are only 11 games. And that means that four series, eight teams are not playing on actual opening day. The A's and J's don't start till Friday. The Rockies and Marlins don't start till Friday. And the Royals and Braves don't start till Friday. I don't understand this. It is going to be the equivalent of like the Squidward meme where he's looking out the window for these fan bases. If someone can explain why this is the case, please let me know. But this sucks. I hate it. This is bad. Bad job.
Totally agree. Whether there's a good reason or not, the opening day should be it for everybody. It's pretty simple. I know we've had weird circumstances, but like the Rays couldn't start because they were playing at Steinbrenner last year. This is not that. So whatever the reason is, it is a disappointing outcome for sure. My bad this week is that Trey Savage will not be available early in the season. It does seem that he is going to start the year on the IL, the rookie sensation, who is still rookie eligible, we should note, coming into this season. But he's got a little bit of a cranky shoulder, and that sucks because this was kind of the fear with Treya Savage all along, and it was so amazing to see him have a full season healthy, dominant all the way to the World Series with the Blue Jays. But the workload was already going to be something they were monitoring this year, and this is an ominous start considering his previous reputation for not being quite as durable. So it's a bummer. I really like Trey as a person, as a pitcher. So the Blue Jays are already kind of dealing with some depth stuff there. So does that mean they're going to finish below 500 as Jake boldly predicted? I don't think so. But there's a reason they kept signing pitchers and will, I guess, have to rely on 42-year-old Max Scherzer, which is probably not the best plan A, but good for Max Scherzer. He gets to keep pitching for the Blue Jays.
My ugly this week was going to be Alex Bregman continuing to shrink, but I'm going to talk about Yermin Mercedes. Yermin Mercedes, Yermin Mercedes, who you probably remember from that time he started the season going 8-for-8. He shined as bright as one can and crashed and burned as quicker than anyone could have ever imagined. He has not played in the major league since 2022. But Yermin Mercedes on his Instagram page just posted an official announcement. Jordan, an official announcement. This announcement is free agent available. Let's go. It is a picture of Yermin, and it says Yermin. It is effectively like a job. It's like something you would see posted in a supermarket where you could like get a piano teacher to like teach your kid, and you like pull the strips with the numbers on it. Yermin Mercedes is a free agent and is available and ready to play anywhere professional baseball is played world. I would have just, like, I know we got a language barrier here. I just would have run that by an English speaker if we're really serious about getting a gig here.
I am way more intrigued by him listing himself as a utility player.
That I mean, is DH the last and word. First base.
That is the last word I would ever use for your mean Mercedes, yeah. Who last year in Mexico, he bounced between first base and left field. But that's tough. But he's still delivering us some quality content on IG, and for that we appreciate him.
Also, agent's phone number. His agent's phone number just being on here is incredible. Should we text him? Should we text the agent so he wants to come play for us?
Get him for your men's league. Seems like he's available. Utility player. Also, if you're wondering, Alex Bregman is shrinking. What are you talking about? All the players are getting measured for ABS, and players' heights are now shockingly a little bit smaller than they originally were. And Alex Bregman's height and Gavin Lux, who was listed at 6'2 for some reason, is now 5'11. But there's a few players whose heights are being super revealed, and that is indeed UGLA. My UGLA, however, is a video posted by the AA affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Altoona Curve posted a video of top prospect Connor Griffin. This was a few days ago. Connor Griffin, famously the top prospect in baseball, who was trying to make the team out of camp, the first teenager to make the opening day roster in a long time, and very few players have ever done it. Anyway, everyone's wondering, where's Connor Griffin going to start the year? Well, the Altoona Curve posted a video of Connor Griffin. It is a very short video, and it is Connor Griffin speaking to the Altoona Curve fans, in which he says the following line. Hey, Curve fans, looking forward to a great season. Let's try to make the playoffs again. That was one of my favorite memories from last year. Go Curve. Why would you post this? What is the purpose of this post? A spring in Pittsburgh defined by whether Connor Griffin is going to make the team. Having him post a video to the AA team, which no one is expecting him to go to, saying, let's try to make the playoffs again. Whose idea was this? If this is direct trolling, it's kind of just cruel and confusing. if this is just trying to confuse people and say that Connor Griffin is going to be with the Altoona Curve, that's weird. If this is a completely innocent, naive idea where it's like, hey, Connor Griffin was on the Curve at the last season and the fans want to hear from him, this is also strange and not something you would ever ask any other player to do if he wasn't going to be playing for them that season. So everything about this is UGLA. Whether he starts the year in AA, it's UGLA because they were telling us that he was. Whether he starts the year in AAA, it's UGLA because it's somewhere in between. Whether he's in the big leagues on opening day and it's like, why did you have him do this? All of it is UGLA. And for that, I thank you, Altoona Curve, because this is just a really strange way to handle this.
Very, very, very odd.
UGLA, UGLA indeed. All right, folks, we did it. A heck of a Friday show. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for joining me. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Not only if you want to join the Baseball Barbercast Fantasy League, but certainly if you want to join the Baseball Barbercast Fantasy League, drafting Tuesday night, 8 Eastern. Let me know if you want in, and I will hopefully invite you here in the next few days. But until next week, enjoy the weekend. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.